Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Six people have been arrested in Belfast after another night of unrest in the city, which saw smashed windows and a hijacked car being deliberately driven into the front of a local business. In Great Britain, it was a relatively quiet night, but tensions are high, with 30 potential gatherings scheduled today and 6,000 police mobilised to respond. British Prime Minister Keir Starmer has expressed a hope that as more rioters are charged and imprisoned, the stark consequences will make people think twice. For the latest, we're joined from Belfast by BBC correspondent Mark Simpson and from London by reporter Vincent McAvinney. Mark, to you first. Can you tell us what happened overnight in Belfast?
Good morning, Philip. Well, the most serious incident was an estate agency attack last night. A hijacked car was rammed into the front of the shop. The owner has been on BBC Radio Ulster this morning talking about the fact that this was as a result of misinformation. He was accused of renting out homes to newcomers to Northern Ireland rather than the indigenous population. People talk about misinformation on social media. Others would call it just blatant lies. Somebody somewhere is whipping up anti-newcomer sentiment here in Belfast. It started on Saturday, and sadly, there's no end in sight.
Mark, what more can you add to this apparent coordination or newfound friendship between anti-immigration protesters south of the border and north of the border? Do you think it was a bit of a flash in the pan, or is there something more enduring there?
Well, my understanding, you probably know better than me, that the group that came up from North Dublin on Saturday have got a very frosty reception back in North Dublin. Those young men and older men who were holding a Kulak says no sign in the front of Belfast City Hall alongside Union flags. The old cliche, my enemy's enemies, my friend, doesn't really seem to hold water in this instance. I think you're right. It was a political marriage of convenience on Saturday. I'm not sure if we'll see it again. I was there, Philip, and somebody looked at the two groups side by side, a tricolour and a union flag in the centre of Belfast, rarely if ever seen before, just looked at the two groups and said, divided by politics, but united by racism.
There's so much of this that feels wearily familiar. Adults in the background controlling young boys and sending them out to actually do the violence. But yet there is, as you say, this new dynamic here with unknown parties whipping up things online as well. Have you any update? Have you any insight on the police's intelligence response to this?
They have been struggling a little bit. There's a new leadership in the PSNI under John Boucher, very, very experienced police officer. But as you say, this is a new dispensation. A lot of police officers, like the rest of us, take their holidays in August. July, as we know, mid-July is seen as the most difficult time in terms of street disorder in Northern Ireland. Nobody really was expecting this. I dare say your guest from England will say this as well. This has come out of the blue. It's based on a lot of misinformation. And I think the police have been on the back foot, not just here in Belfast, but in parts of England as well.
Mark, thank you very much. Vincent McAvinney joins us now from London, where it's been somewhat quieter across the UK in the last 24 hours. But tell us about these 30 planned events later on today, Vincent.
Yeah, it has been quieter in the past 24 hours, but there is a lot of nervousness about what to expect this evening. Now, this list first appeared on Telegram, but it's managed to make its way onto social media. Reporting outlets, though, aren't sort of saying where the list, what the places are, because they don't want to highlight the targets of this. They want to keep people away from these areas as much as possible. Now, there is some, I know, tonight in central London for the first time. They'll be in North East London. Whilst we did have some on Downing Street last week, that is quite a sort of controlled area already. This is the first time we'll see it in a highly diverse sort of urban area of London, so that is a concern. What the police are saying, though, and what the intelligence seems to be, is that they're not sure quite if this list is just being put out to scare people, if it is accurate, if it's a signal sign for people to go there, or what exactly will happen tonight. What is happening is that a lot of people, particularly those people from ethnic and minority communities, have decided today to simply work from home, to stay at home. They've expressed a lot of nerves nerves. Also, companies have been putting on taxis and other services to get them to and from work. Even MPs are being told to think about the security of their offices tonight and to work from home perhaps today. So there is a bit of tension in the air because it's unclear what exactly is going to happen.
Your new Prime Minister is, of course, a former Director of Public Prosecution, so no surprise, perhaps, that he would be emphasising the consequences that will befall anybody who engages in this kind of violence. Is that message breaking through, though, do you think?
Well, I think what they're trying to do is get it out as loud as possible. And we know young people in particular have turned away from traditional media sources, but they have been very vocal highlighting the sentences that people are getting who have appeared in court already. We've had that first sentence issued, but also the people on first appearance, you know, some of them weeping in the dock as they're told they won't be getting bail. They'll be held until their hearing date. And then we've seen recently a crackdown on the Just Stop Oil protests, with people who were in non-violent but disruptive protests getting long and hard sentences. And very much the public sentiment seems to be that those who've engaged in this mindless racist violence should be getting the maximum sentencing as well. And I think that is something we'll see. We know that, and perhaps this factored into people why they thought they might be able to get away with some of this, is that the jails are pretty full here in the UK at the moment, almost at maximum capacity. But Labour in the past month say they've managed to free up around 500 spaces to deal with people. So they don't want people to think just because prisons are full after the Conservative government's mismanagement of the justice system that they won't be being sent to jail.
Vincent, it's an absolutely ghastly prospect that you highlight there of people of Asian or African background feeling that they have to stay at home if at all possible. Something that you just don't think that would be happening in a otherwise developed and civilized country. What other impacts have you seen all of this having on victims and on ethnic minorities?
Well, it's really ugly and it's really uncomfortable. And I think the fact is, because this all seems so random, that is why there is a lot of nerves about it. It's not sort of focused in one geographic location, and it's being controlled and coordinated by members of the far right using social media and closed groups. And some of those we believe to be abroad as well, trying to stoke up tensions. So that is what is sort of scary about it. We also saw, you know, comparisons being made a lot to the London 2011 riots. Back then, the coordination was being done via BBM Messenger. I don't know if you remember BlackBerry's. That was where it was. Now, the government took action and effectively shut down that service. And that did bring an end to it back in the day. And, you know, as well as a weather change, that helps. The rain is the policeman's friends. Now, we've hit a pretty nice day in London today, which will maybe encourage people out. But the government is struggling with these closed services like Telegram and Signal to sort of get access. We know in other countries that they've managed to shut down certain channels on those, which were being used, you know, ostensibly for law breaking and disrupting civil society. But the government doesn't seem to have that same kind of power, or doesn't want to exert that kind of power yet. They have, we understand, had meetings with social media companies and reminding them that incitement to violence is a crime, and incitement to racial hatred is a crime in this country. But so far, they don't seem to be taking much action, particularly, of course, Twitter under the control of Elon Musk.
Indeed. All right. Thank you very much, Vincent McAvinny. We're going to go to Rotherham in South Yorkshire now, where on Sunday, anti-immigrant rioters smashed windows and started fires at a hotel housing asylum seekers. My next guest has been a part of the cleanup and working in the community since that violence took place. Jamie Noble is the head of community at Rotherham United Football Club. Jamie, very good morning to you. Thanks for talking to us. What happened at this hotel sounds absolutely terrifying.
Yeah, yes, it sounds like it was. I wasn't there, but we've spoke to lots of residents who, it's a very urban area, and speaking to residents, you know, it scared them to death, and them and the families.
240 asylum seekers moved on, people having to barricade themselves with chairs and tables in behind doors of the hotel, while a mob of up to 700 people surrounded the place. That must shake anybody's faith in the place that they live to its core.
Yeah, I mean, imagine, you know, you live in a really nice residential area with 2,000 homes, and right in the heart of the area is a hotel with a supermarket and a little pub and a row of shops and everything. And that's exactly where it happened. And, you know, it was a Sunday afternoon. It was nice weather. There was gardens overlooking the hotel. There was families out playing on the little grassed area and things like that. And then, you know, it all went wrong, didn't it, let's say.
Well, how you have responded in the football club is very interesting. I mean, you are public figures. I suppose you would be called influencers now. What have you chosen to do?
You know, we're Rotherham United. We are very proud of the town that we represent on a national level. We know that our fans, the majority of our fans, will come from the town itself or will have links with it. And we're owned by a community. We're owned by a family who live in the town, and we're very community orientated. So the first thing we did when it was made to my attention that something was happening in Rotherham was to look at the news and kind of start to go back to your COVID days and the days that when we had floods and things to see what there was that we could do. So, you know, the following morning, we supported the clear up. 150 to 200 volunteers turned up at 6 o'clock in the morning to start clearing the bricks and the wood and, you know, the weapons, really. And then since then, we've been walking and talking to the residents about the feelings and to try and sort of alleviate some of the anxieties. And, you know, we'll continue to do that through the power of football.
Have you had any uncomfortable conversations with those who are opposed to immigration?
Yeah, you know, overwhelmingly, you know, as a community, they've come together and we've cleaned up and we've stuck together. People, you know, may remember the miners' strikes in the 80s. You know, the fights were compared to that. And yes, we've been met with some people, you know, using some hateful words around, you know, the people who were in the hotel that day. You know, what they forget is that it's not their fault that they were put in a hotel, you know, in the middle of a residential area. That's where the government decided to put them. So yeah, there are, unfortunately, you know, comments of cars passing by and people walking past and sort of being nosy to see what happened. Okay. and everything.
Uncomfortable but necessary conversations. Jamie Noble, Head of Community at Rotherham United Football Club. Thank you very much.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.